RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
All right, time for our health hacks. Dr. Anna Goodwin is a retired oncologist, fellow of the Royal Australasian College of Physicians, fellow of the Royal Australasian College of Nutritional and Environmental Medicine, fellow of the Australasian Society of Lifestyle Medicine, and a New Zealand natural health practitioner. Just about qualified to come on our health hacks. Anna, nice to have you back on our health hacks. You're back in NZ. Last time you were in Tennessee, I think, when we were talking.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's always great to be back and have spring here. And thanks again for having me on, Paul. It's always a pleasure.
When you were speaking from Tennessee, I had visions of, in the background somewhere, was this twister that was coming your way, you know, like from some sort of movie. And I was listening out for any telltale signs.
They roar through there from time to time, but yeah. Thankfully I was over here when the really nasty things hit with the hurricane. There's still a lot of cleanup going on over there and some lives that are really, really wrecked. So lots of prayers for those people.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we've talked cancer before, obviously you being an oncologist, and I've had an experience with cancer, and we're going to kind of talk about dealing with, well, getting the news and the whole thing, emotionally, mentally, etc. I'm sure this confronts many people. I know it does. Is there anywhere to go or anyone to talk to, any resources available, you know, when you get hit with this sort of news, apart from the one-on-one, you know, do your own research, but where do you start, you know, that kind of thing?
Well, there's a lot of resources online. I don't like to advertise any one person, including myself, but there are a lot of people who have great expertise in sort of helping people through this. And the first and foremost thing with cancer is the fear factor. Some wise people have said there are many, many diseases worse than cancer, but none is more feared. And I think that's really true. And the longer I've been helping people with this journey, the less I'm afraid of cancer, because I actually see so many people living with it and living really well with it, even when they were told they were terminal. And then one of my cheeky New Zealand patients said to me one day, as I was chatting to him, that he wasn't afraid of dying because he knew that life was a sexually transmitted terminal disease, and he had tried to live life to the full. And after I picked my jaw up, I realized that was really quite important, because, you know, when you're faced with a cancer diagnosis, it's you immediately think that it's going to kill you. Mm. But I've had many patients that were diagnosed with terminal pancreatic cancer 8 years ago, and they're still living. And then I've had people that I thought were cured of their cancer, and they died of something else. So there is this great mystery called life that we cannot predict. And really the best thing we can do is to just look at what's in our hand as our coping strategies, look at the things in our life and our peeps that we have around us that make us strong. Look at things we can do with our diet that are likely to make healthier tissue and send signals that are not giving the message of injury and inflammation. And energetically to work every day on releasing the fear factor. And in the little seminar that we had the other night called An Integrative Journey Through Cancer, you can find that online. Susie Brown, who's a health coach and a cancer survivor herself, she gave this great eponym for fear. It was forgetting every available resource. And when we start taking stock of our resources, and you can start stacking up your resilience, and you realize, right, today I have good food to eat. I have healthy, positive people around me. I'm going to take a walk on the beach or in the bush. And, you know, it's very important to keep moving. It's been shown that exercise is one of the key factors for enhancing not only quantity of life, but quality of life in cancer patients. And there's been a good study that for patients going through radiation therapy, it actually reduces their fatigue factor if they're able to go for a nice walk and get some fresh air for 30 minutes after treatment. They tend tend to have a more brisk recovery from their radiation treatments. So all these things that are actually right on our plate, sometimes I think doctors and health practitioners, we kind of have our shtick that we've got to sell people or whatever, but we forget that there's so many good points that are accessible to everyone. And we've had many talks about the importance of getting a little bit of sun on your skin, and you know, the vitamin D factor is huge. And you know, if you're sensitive to the sun or you're on chemotherapy, it might not be the best thing while you're on treatment. But certainly, vitamin D was meant to be available to all of us, and it doesn't cost a thing to be out in the sun and collecting a bit of it on your skin. Mm. Music therapy is amazing. We, in many respects, our bodies are frozen sound. Mass sort of resonates at the same frequency as sound. They're sort of in a dynamic continuum. And so when we listen to sacred music, when we meditate on classical music like Chopin or Liszt and some of the great composers, and, you know, just sort of instrumental guitar music, especially, you know, as it's related to what energy level your cancer was located, you know, in particular, like if you have a pelvic cancer, sometimes a low C is very, very important. I actually have a singing bowl that plays a low C, and many people that do musical or sound healing have access to these things, and people can order those, or they can download things on Spotify that, you know, just kind of put them in the zone. And it really does help for us to be in the zone where you're not being fearful, because it's the fear factor that weakens the immune system and certainly makes everything in life harder. And it also raises cortisol levels, which impede healing. And the fear is also sending cellular injury signals and raising your adrenaline levels, which make it very, very hard for healing to happen. And so I'm finding that anything that's fair game to help someone get in the zone are really part of the important tool chest for people to embrace. And if anyone's interested in that webinar, it's called An Integrative Cancer Journey. And a very special lady named Lisa McCarthy put that together as a tribute to her mother who had breast cancer.
I'm thinking heavy metal is probably not going to help out too much on the music. Well, maybe it might make it worse.
It depends. if it puts you in the zone, I mean, right. But I guess everyone's got a slightly different zone.
The Bee Gees.
They resonate with. Sometimes I like a good guitar riff myself, It just depends on what kind of mood I'm in.
I don't want to make it about me, but I got personal experience, so I think I can reference that. So when I found out I had cancer, I sort of knew anyway, but it was official, was the GP examining me around the neck because I got cancer, tongue cancer. And it was the look on her face that said it all. That was when it hit me. The look on her face, I knew there was something wrong because the look on her face, you know, it was like, oh my God, poor bastard kind of look. And things went pretty quick. Then the next thing was, well, just my damn luck. It's so typical. But I got to say, I mean, there was fear there, and everybody has a different way. It didn't take long before the, oh, well, sort of came into it. And that I found was quite good because then the fear wasn't so much, and then you could start to methodically think about what you could do, and I need to find information and, you know, don't panic. You don't know anything yet, da-da-da. And it got quite logical, and I found that quite a good way to go through. But one thing I did never do during that is I never asked how long I had. I didn't want to hear any of that talk because it looked pretty dicey. I didn't want to know that. I thought as soon as I know that, that could set something in train that wouldn't work out too well. That's what I thought.
You know, I think that's really an important point that you raise, Paul, because doctors actually don't know when someone's going to die. As I alluded to earlier, you know, they're quoting statistics. And the one of the beautiful things that came out in this seminar is just, you know, one of the ladies who was a cancer survivor mentioned that she was given all the grim statistics. And then she just said it literally just pissed her off. And she walked off and decided that that wasn't her. And I think that's a really important marker of survivors, because there's always hope. And I think when we put someone, a living, breathing human being, in the category of a statistic, we really do them a disservice. And we create sort of a whole nocebo effect around whatever treatment options they're getting when we start quoting statistics about these things. I mean, I generally tell people that I've seen a lot of people that actually respond very well to this. And you've got a lot of, you've got a really good support system. You've got, you know what to eat to make your body healthy. And, you know, why not create something hopeful for people as opposed to beating them over the head with statistics that don't apply to them as an individual? And, you know, when I've had the opportunity to sort of share this thinking with registrars and people that might be interested in interacting with an integrative approach to cancer, it's not deception, because I honestly do see people live with cancer a very long time. They might not get cured. I think the cure word might be a dirty word, because sometimes they're chasing a cure so hard that they forget to live while they're doing it. And they put themselves through a whole lot of stuff that may or may not be to their benefit. And they're absolutely on the adrenaline express. And I think one of the roles that I've had over the years, and it's been quite a privilege to help people kind of live in their skin. And it's just an amazing relief to see come over people's faces when they stop fighting the whole idea that they've got cancer and they might not live forever. Well, let's just talk about life now. You know, you stop focusing on the disease, you stop focusing on the possibility that you might die, which was always there. In fact, it's inevitable. But the key is to focus on life and focus on living while you're here. And when that shift happens in someone's thinking, it's a transformation. And then they just can go on living with their cancer for a long time. Some people don't. But it still is a much happier place to be, even if they don't live as long as any of us would like. But, you know, the whole journey here is the soul's journey. We are, you know, spiritual beings in a physical body, and this is the ultimate journey is one of the soul. And finding our way back to creator, universe, or whatever people want to call it. But there's very definitely an energetic component to cancer that I think oftentimes gets neglected. And it's the important energetic component of the person. And so I think it's because cancer is blocked energy that, you know, we have this chi energy that flows throughout our bodies. And when the energy is blocked on a certain level, you know, it just kind of makes sense. So when we start opening up these, you know, energy forces and start getting them working for our healing, and the biggest healing energy for the body is unconditional love. And when we have unconditional love and we're able to displace the fear in our bodies and open up the channels of healing, it's really transformational to the cellular energy frequencies, to the way the person functions, to their level of self-care, to the way they interact with others. They're more able to accept things. I mean, most cancer patients are fiercely self-reliant. And part of that fierce self-reliance is because there's been a breach of trust in their life. There's been an injury in their whole level of, you know, the way their heart is able to open. And this may sound really woolly coming from an oncologist, but I just see it so often that, you know, I think part of the healing is to be able to trust that other people can love you as you are and do things for you and that you can begin to accept that. And that also brings healing, I think, to many people. And then there's the food, and we don't think about how our food impacts the way our bodies work in terms of our microbiome. The microbiome has its own particular frequency, and there are certain foods that are really quite inexpensive that make a huge difference. Even just having a forkful of organic sauerkraut per day makes a huge difference in the mouth flora that can protect us from oral cancers, the digestive flora, which helps us digest our food and also reduces inflammation in our body. And importantly, if someone's on immune checkpoint inhibitors, we know that some of these gut bugs are vital for antigen presentation for these checkpoint inhibitors. And we know that the checkpoint inhibitors might not even work if the right gut flora is not there. So we've got sunlight, we've got letting go of fear, hanging out with friends, connection, movement, energy, gut health, and then there's good sleep. And so sleep is absolutely vital, and it's one of the most critically missing things for people who are unwell. And it's one of the first places I like to start with healing. And if I could get one medication reinstated in New Zealand, it would probably be melatonin. Helen Clark decided that needed to be regulated, but you can get it at every store in America. Every dairy, every 7-Eleven has melatonin that can be purchased. But melatonin is vital for serotonin production, and it promotes restorative sleep. It helps immune function. We know that it's inversely related to breast cancer. So when you have healthy melatonin levels, that's protective of breast cancer, probably protective of a few other cancers as well. So sleep, very important. Magnesium at bedtime, particularly like magnesium orotate or something that doesn't give people diarrhea. A non-diarrhea-causing magnesium would be helpful at night to help people relax. It also alleviates muscle cramps. And it also is important for many of our enzymes of detoxification. And most cancer patients are quite deficient in magnesium, selenium, and zinc in particular. So those are some, you know, just having a nice multivitamin, multimineral complex to complement your healthy diet. Those are all very reasonable things. And we're still not, you know, costing anyone a bomb with this. And these are just very basic, you know, ground level health hacks that if people do these things, I think that they probably will improve their resilience and probably, you know, reduce their risk of cancer relapse. I'm seeing it all the time. And so I've always focused very heavily on making sure people have an adequate vitamin D level, adequate B12 level, because those are key things that help regulate our cells. And yeah, just having the fermented foods, I think is huge. You can take a probiotic, but getting your probiotic in your diet is brilliant. And you know, things like kombucha, kefir, and yogurt, all those things, if you're not dairy intolerant, if you are dairy intolerant, you segue into coconut products or dairy free. And these things are all quite attainable. And, you know, these are just some of the things that I'm putting before all of my patients. And then, you know, we can certainly hone in on a specific cancer and, you know, a specific treatment option, specific supplements, but just laying the groundwork for overall good health, I think, is so important. And coming from this from an integrative standpoint, you know, I think of cancer as a response to injury, and it's promoted by inflammation. And the body can normally fix itself, but for malnutrition. And the malnutrition comes about in certain key vitamins like the B12, like the D, like the lack of selenium, magnesium, and zinc. And so we close those doors, and the person has a chance to heal. And I find that the chemotherapy even works better. I've had the privilege of seeing a lot of patients that have gone through chemotherapy concurrent with, you know, some of the nutritional paradigms that we put before them. And and they have much less toxicity. They get better responses. And the key to surviving cancer is to quit making it. So if you go through chemo and radiation, the real key is to just stop making the cancer. And that involves dealing with the terrain. The whole terrain theory really does matter in terms of secondary prevention. You want to change the soil so that you no longer grow the weed that you're trying to avoid. That's kind of a brief overview in a nutshell, and there's a lot more information online. I've got a few podcasts on Substack on the PSGR website, and you know, there's no cost for any of these things. If people just want to, you know, learn a bit more about how they can help themselves with a cancer diagnosis, it's just there for them. I did this for them, and they don't have to see me. It's just, if they want the information, it's there.
So just conscious of time here. So that's fantastic to hear that laid out like that. That's such useful information. But still, and we're going back to where we started, overlaid on that is what's happening between the ears, you know, what you're thinking, your outlook, how you're relating to other people, because other people are involved in this. I mean, I remember with my situation, I had a young family. They had to deal with this, and that freaked them out as well, possibly more than it freaked me out. I spoke to someone, interviewed someone, but I interview so many people that sometimes I forget the names of them, but they said, and it stuck in my head what this person said, and that was, if you're in this situation, they had been in that situation, treat it kind of like a show. You're in a show, and what's going to happen in the show, and what is your role in this show? And that kind of connects to the soul dimension in a way, because the experience I went through, other people have been through more brutal than me, but I'm glad I had it. And I'll tell you why, because it gave me a perspective that I could only vicariously live through someone else in my position, that I wasn't in that position. So it sounds crazy. I'm thankful I got it.
You know, it's an irony. That's the irony here, that when you like the old saying goes, when you're going through hell, don't stop and look around. But when you survive something like this and you come out the other side and you realize what really matters to you, and you know, it is a real struggle when you're a young person with a young family and your biggest worry is freaking your children out and not being there for them or not being there for your spouse. And, you know, it's so important just to, you know, while you're going through these things, just, you know, you might just set your cap to, okay, I'm going to keep a good attitude and I'm going to stay mindful of from now till lunch. And I'm going to do, you just bite off smaller chunks of time so that you can get through the drudgery and the trudgery of this treatment, that what you went through was very difficult, Paul.
It was five months of grind.
Yeah, it's a very difficult treatment to go through what you went through, but you're a living tribute. And I mention your name all the time because patients need to know that people do make it to the other side. And you've been so public about that. And I think that's really a beautiful gift that you've shared with your audience to make people aware of the fact that, yes, you can live through this. Treatment sucks. There's no way to sugarcoat it. I wouldn't say it didn't suck.
No.
But, you know, with good support and an awareness of what you can do to help yourself, you know, people get through it so well compared to people that are feeling unsupported and don't have an awareness of things they can do to help. And even things like aloe vera, you know, it's not a very tasty herb, but when you're suffering with burns, either to use it topically or you know, just holding a little bit of the gel component in your mouth helps with some of the mouth burning. And just a few little tricks like that help people that are going through radiation treatments. And, you know, in the Bay of Plenty, at least, there's, you know, Volkswagen size aloe vera growing on the beach in places. So it doesn't cost anything. And you know, everybody's struggling a bit economically right now. So I like to put things out there that don't cost people anything and that they can perhaps incorporate in their life. I do believe that almost everything that we need for our healing has been placed in this earth, medication-wise, herb-wise, and just as a general hack for your cooking, to embellish some of the spices. Ginger is really good for nausea. Garlic is good for your immune system, good for your zinc channels, and leeks are very, very good. Curcumin, I mean, all of these things are there for people, and you don't have to buy them in supplement form. By the time people get around to seeing me, they're often so sick of taking pills. I just have given up on trying to get people to take pills. So I'm usually kind of helping them economize and segue more into what they need for their diet. So,
really good chat, actually, really good chat. And for relatives, family, friends, it just is what it is. You've just got to accept it is what it is, right? I mean,
take it one day at a time and you can do it.
Yeah, you can do it. All right, quickly before you go, I've been advised of your open letter to the Tauranga City Council, the Honourable Mayor, Mahi Drysdale, and the council over fluoride. Do you want to just quickly, in the minute or two we've got left, describe to the listeners what's that about?
Sure. I got in trouble initially in 2013 for talking about fluoride. So it was it's taken me this long to get back into it, but it's important to look at the social contract that I think our leaders have with us. And that contract is based on trust, and it's based on a fiduciary responsibility. And what has happened here, in my view, is that the Director General of Health has breached her fiduciary responsibility, which actually required her under the law to review the latest scientific data and the latest evidence before making this decision and deciding if the risk versus the benefit profile was actually worthwhile for the individual citizens or the community of Tauranga in particular. And we've got an aging population. We don't have a lot of, we do have young families, but the evidence for benefit of fluoride is pretty spartan as far as the fluoridation of our water that does qualify as mass medication. So the specific statute is 161E and 161F of the Drinking Water Amendments Bill. And these are not negotiable. These are mandatory relevant considerations, which she must consider, or she is in breach. And we, the taxpayers of Tauranga, have not had anything disclosed to us as far as the cost commitment that we will be embarking upon to maintain this fluoridation infrastructure. The Ministry of Health apparently had $11 million that they were going to throw around to get more communities to fluoridate. So we don't know exactly how this is being used. But it's very clear that the overwhelming turnout for the public hearing on the matter was for people opposed to this measure. And we know from many good studies that the best way of getting fluoride is either on your toothbrush with some toothpaste and dental rinses, not through swallowing it. The impact on your teeth from swallowing it is minuscule. If any, it's there in your mouth. The water is there in your mouth for a short time. It just basically poisons your body, and it's cumulative, and the body doesn't get rid of it very well. And it's also got the heavy metals and various other toxins. So it's something we really don't need, and we have to question whether this outdated practice is really for the benefit of New Zealand. Only 5% of the world is actually fluoridating their water. And I think it's a practice that's really fallen out of vogue in most of the rest of the world. And we have to wonder why New Zealand would continue this.
I've said it before, I'll say it again. We seem to have specialized in poisoning ourselves here. It's one thing we seem to be doing quite well over a long period of time. And we never seem to let up, but we just keep adding ways of doing it. Anyway.
That's very sad, but true, Paul.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, that was great. Dr. Anna Goodwin, oncologist on Health Hacks here at RCR. Thank you, Anna. Look forward to our next chat. And it won't be too far away. Okay.
Take care. Bye for now.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.